Good afternoon, and welcome to the next in the series of the Shop Talk Community Podcast. This afternoon, I'm pleased to welcome Wayne Umland, who is the CIO of Glatfelter's Insurance Group. Wayne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, George.
And just briefly, Wayne, before we start with our questions here, can you just give the audience a very brief description of Glatfelter and how it differs from the normal carrier environments they might expect?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Glatfelter Insurance Group is really an MGA. We're program administrators, program managers, if you will, and we've been in business for about 60 years. We write specialty programs for various niche markets. Our largest program is the emergency services business, volunteer firefighters, EMT teams, ambulance companies. We also have programs that involve hospice, home health, and senior living, religious practices, small municipalities, and special districts, water, sewer, irrigation. We actually act like a carrier in that we have full authority, and we're on the risk through an offshore captive. So we feel the pain, we feel the fortune, and we do everything a carrier historically or typically does, pay claims, bind, rate, quote, issue, all of that.
Great. So let's start, as we always do on these podcasts, with the vendor marketplace. You and your team, the Glatfelters, have been active in the market in different aspects of the core systems arena over the years here. So from your vantage point, characterize, if you would, the changes that you have seen in the core systems vendor market, let's say over the last 5 to 6 years.
Well, I think, you know, I would say that the market has changed a lot over the years. We actually started down the road of systems modernization back in the late 90s and undertook a couple of different projects in order to implement core systems. And as you and I both know, George, the road is littered with vendors who thought that building systems was easy and simple and they could make a fortune doing it. But I think over the recent past, we've seen a lot of consolidation, a lot of acquisition of smaller companies with specialty focuses. And of late, we're seeing more full suite models emerging from our experience and from where we're looking. So I think it's different than just the policy admin and rating vendor and a claims vendor and billing that are different. While they still exist, I think the trend is more towards a full suite model.
That's true. And one of the other things, it's almost become a buzzword, but I think it's a lot more than that, is that most of these vendors are now counting themselves as being, or counting their solutions, their software solutions, as being configurable. What does that mean to you and your team, and how important is the ability to possibly be able to offload some of the maintenance and enhancement work from IT people to the people that know it best in the business world?
Sure. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think configurable is more and more the norm in almost any of the specific core applications. For us, we have a small IT staff, comparatively. So we're trying to build systems and implement systems where the business unit can literally take charge. And by that, I mean have either business analysts or experienced underwriters who with a specific charge build forms, build rates into these systems, if it's a policy admin or a rating solution, through tables or through scripts where the users can actually take responsibility for doing these things on their own. They don't have to put a request into an IT organization and get that project prioritized and ranked against lots of others that are in the queue. So it's very important for us to look at solutions where we can step away after implementation and let the business owners take charge of helping build out product changes or enhancements or rating changes. Not that IT isn't involved in the actual implementation of that once they're built, but it's important for the business to take ownership for that.
Let me ask a follow-on to that, and this actually came up in conversation with a couple of your technical staff members that I was talking with last week. If vendors genuinely have considerable configuration toolkits and environments, which not only the business people can interact with, but also IT can also do the vast majority of what it needs to do. Is the concern about languages and environments valid anymore? Do we care if it's Java or if it's .NET, if we're actually dealing with a vendor implementation toolkit?
No. I mean, the simple answer is no. I mean, obviously, we have to be sure that we can support it in our environments, our internal environments, and our infrastructure. But how the vendor has created the tool for us to use is really immaterial as long as it can be implemented and we can run it. We're not going to be maintaining the tool, the vendor is. So how it's written becomes less critical than the ability to use it. So I would say that, you know, other than from an infrastructure perspective and getting it implemented, no, it doesn't really matter what it's written in.
Yeah, interesting. So one of the so configurable is very much, you know, a term of art that's current with us. One that has more recently, but has established itself over the last few years, is software as a service, and of course, moving these kinds of core applications to the cloud.
Right.
So this is now subject to the great marketing hype today is in this space. Are you watching that space? Are you interested in it? Do you think it's ready for prime time or not?
We have been watching it. We have started to dabble in it, if you will, for non-customer focused systems. We've recently moved our financials implementation out to a software as a service model because it was plain vanilla. It didn't differentiate us from the competition. We didn't need to worry about having to make a lot of changes to it. So that was our first dabble with software as a service. I do think that the SaaS model and cloud provide some significant benefits for a company like us. It's a pay-as-you-go kind of service. You don't have to go out and build a lot of new servers when you're implementing a system or enhancing a system. Scalability doesn't become an issue for you. Most of these vendors have a DR model that also satisfies any kind of business continuity or disaster recovery planning. So I think it's great for companies who are in a growth mode or an acquisition mode where you can buy quickly, buy additional space, buy additional server capacity, and not have to worry about building that into your own infrastructure. Is it ready for prime time? I'm not sure. I think some of the vendors clearly are. Others are jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak. And I think you need to be prudent and careful when you're looking at the solutions to make sure that you have the right service level agreements in place, the right contingencies, and the right out clauses if you decide to opt into it.
Okay, so let's talk a little about software selection. Assuming you buy the assumption which is in this question, give me your take on and give me your answer to it, if you would. So with all the viable solutions in the marketplace today and the fact that there are more and better options for an entity like yourself, do you feel it's easier or harder to select the right vendor?
My reaction to the question is that it's clearly harder to select the right vendor. I think it's easier to narrow the selection. I think it's easier to determine who the viable vendors are for our specific needs. But I think once you've done that, it becomes a more difficult challenge to really probe properly and make that final selection. They all sound very similar. They all sound, they come to you with the right capabilities expressed, and it makes that decision a bit more difficult. I think it's changed the way we look at vendors, and we rely more on a partnership approach to our solutions than the traditional vendor approach, if you will.
Okay. Which raises the following question. How important do you feel those softer aspects of carrier vendor relationships are? Culture, partnership fit, in actually finding and defining the right vendor?
Absolutely critical. It's the softer aspects of the relationship for us are key to making the selection. I care less about the number of people a vendor has on their staff. I care less about how many implementations they have. I care much more about making sure that their philosophy and their culture matches ours. And I think the reason for that is we're really looking to them to be an extension of our staff. I want them to understand our business, our model of marketing and underwriting or claims or whatever it is, and what our strategies are. I don't want to have to constantly deal with a new set of eyes from a vendor because they've changed resources. I want them to assign a team to work side by side with us and understand who we are, what we believe in, why we want something built the way we want it, so that this is as much their end product and implementation as it is ours. So culture is very important for us, number one, and it's very important for us to find a vendor that matches our culture.
Okay, great. So a couple of points we've made. Number one, there are more and more capable vendors in the marketplace. They do, I believe, have more of a partnership orientation. They mean well. They try hard. The software's better. However, studies continue to show that more than two-thirds of core system modernization projects miss their budget, their timeline, or in some significant way, their expected outcomes. And it's still the case that at least one in five fail outright. Given the improvements we've talked about from the vendor side, what do you think are the main reasons we're still seeing so many trouble projects?
It's really difficult to describe that because the studies are right. So you read the case studies over and over again, and it continues to be true. The budgets are missed, timelines are missed, and projects fail. And these projects are hard. They're not simple implementations. Even if you have a configurable system, even if you've bought what is perceived to be the best of breed, I think vendors that continue to use the waterfall approach that, go through the old process of tell me what your requirements are, then we'll process them, we'll transform them, we'll write specs, then you can sign off, we'll build it. By the time that system is implemented, it's taken longer, it's taken more people, the requirements have changed, and you're always in this catch-up mode. I think scope creep continues to happen unless you're willing to be very determined to implement either in phases or implement in chunks, use an agile approach to this thing. You've got to get something out there, I think, to demonstrate the end result, even if it's only phase one, and get people using things. And then build from there. These 18-month, two-year projects are doomed to fail, and they're doomed to go over budget and time frames because the world changes too quickly. Either the technology changes or the business has changed, the requirements constantly change, and your competitors are always copying you, right? There's nothing that keeps the competition from staying stable while you're trying to implement something. So I think it's just a combination of expectations, quickness of change, the pace of change, the pace of technology change, and changing the model so that you start to develop and build and implement in a more timely approach.
And to follow on from that and also to finish, because we only have time for one more question here, how prepared do you feel carriers are to handle the additional, let me call it infrastructure, that happens in these kinds of major core system replacements, things like more formal project management, more formal quality assurance, specific plans for training and rollout and conversion. These are things that if we're doing maintenance for several years, we can get by without being too formal or too structured. How does a carrier up its game to deal with one of these big problems?
I think your question is really appropriate, because I think the project management of these major implementations is always underestimated, as is the QA that needs to happen. If you're talking about one of the core systems, I think you need to clearly have a different project management model. I think the team needs to meet regularly, needs to communicate regularly, but there also needs to be some kind of executive governance process on top of it that's looking more at the long-term direction, the strategic direction, if you will, and they're kept informed. The project team going off and doing their own thing just doesn't work anymore with these large-scale implementations. I think communication is absolutely, it needs to be stepped up. It's mandatory. It's essential to keep everyone in the loop, keep them informed, identify risks, identify potential delays, and make sure that everything is well documented, well constructed, and well communicated. The QA piece is huge. When you're doing something, even if it's not on a national scale, with all the different regulations that are out there and the different conditions and possible scenarios that exist, they all have to be tested. They all have to be regression tested as you implement a later phase. And it's a big task. It takes a lot of staff, a lot of people. It takes a lot of prudence to make sure that things are thoroughly tested and ready to go. And the last thing you want to do is implement a system and find out that your out-of-sequence endorsements and a rating and issuance system don't work right. You know, so I think it's a much bigger task than people think it's going to be, and that's one of the keys, I think, to really making sure that you can implement effectively.
And on that note, we have to say thank you. We're out of time. Wayne, thank you for your insights. These things are never long enough. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you, George.